So, here we are, arriving at the great joy. After riding along with the hope all this series, these 7 weeks. You know, yesterday I had the honor of being invited to a celebration of life service to speak there. And it was one of our congregants, Jackie Grant. Some of you may know Jackie Grant. Her husband Nick and family were celebrating her life. And Jackie was really active here, I think, back in the Carol Ruth Knox days, and has been. I met her, so she came Easter Sunday and a few times. Anyway, Jackie was a really joyful presence, a really radiant smile. And as soon as I walked into the place, not only was the chapel itself really beautiful with lots of live plants and white chairs and just kind of a very alive feeling in there, but there were pictures of Jackie's radiant smile everywhere. One of the things that was most unusual that I've never seen at a memorial service is in the vestibule they had really brightly colored clothes like pink fuchsia capris and a purple shirt and a multicolored jacket and a bright blue scarf and a pink hat to top it all off. And it was all just kind of arranged in such a way that it was almost like a person was there, but it wasn't a mannequin or anything. And so they referred to that as Jackie. And Jackie got moved from the vestibule into the altar area when it was time to celebrate her life and have people share. So it was really a beautiful thing to be a part of. And one of the things that Nick, her husband, shared was that she was one of those people that just had this kind of contagious kind of way of being. He said people would just fall under her spell, as he did, obviously. And that spell was a spell of joy. So how lovely to go to this place, what seeming is a seeming facing of death, and have it be such a joyful recognition of what we say in unity is making our transition, right? Moving from one form into another. When we are, as a person, someone who shows up with that kind of joy, that's the legacy we live, right? Or we leave behind. If it's love, then it's love that we leave behind. Maybe it's some combination of love and joy and peace and so on, the kinds of qualities that we really strive to, or not even strive, that we really just embody here at Unity, right? The core values that we hold. So the ancient Egyptians had a way of being, when the transition happened of life, they believed that you were asked two primary questions at that time as you were making your transition. And if your answer was no to either of them, you had more work to do before you fully entered into heaven. And the two questions that were significant as you were ending this earthly life were, did you find joy? And secondly, did you bring joy? So we ourselves, we don't have to wait for that moment, right, at the pearly gates. We can, so to speak, we can ask ourselves those questions all the time, every day. Did I find joy today? Did I bring joy today? How will I find and bring joy today? You know, we generally, finding it is a good idea first, because then we can really bring it, right? But this ongoing question can be present for us. In a Chinese proverb, they say that one joy chases away 100 griefs. That one joy can scatter griefs everywhere. And so one moment of laughter, one moment when we are fully present in the joy of this moment, completely engaged in the bliss of the Spirit within us, those kinds of moments that stand still where we are completely unaware of time, those moments can scatter 100 griefs. They do, in fact. So this great joy that we're entering today has 6 weeks of at least 6 weeks of time that is before it. And so I want to go back a little bit and take you through the journey that we've been on. The very first week of this journey, what we did was faced the deaths that are going on in the world. The way Andrew Harvey phrased it was the deaths, right? The many ways in which things are possibly dying away or definitely dying away in our world. Things we must say goodbye to. As we then say hello to what it is that we are rebirthing. But that first week, I know some of you who especially were in the study group said, that chapter was really hard. you know, just reading about all this stuff going on in the world and really taking that in. And I think also it's really hard because it's not like you're just watching the news, but you're with a spiritual group of people with hearts wide open, and you're coming to this in spiritual work, and so our hearts are open in a kind of different way, a more maybe tender way, a more compassionate way, so it really gets in there. But that is part of the work, you know, to let it get in there, to let ourselves feel what we feel, and then to move beyond. And so that first week was maybe one of the most difficult weeks along this journey, although we had some other times along the way that we looked at some difficult things. We embraced on this journey the mystical renaissance. And the mystical means the direct experience with God, right? So the mystic is one who directly experiences God. So our mystical side is the side of us that is attuned within. And when we feel that presence, when we perhaps go into meditation or prayer together is one of the likely times that we begin to feel that presence and become aware of that presence and have that experience. Or for many of you who are nature mystics, you really experience that in a place of nature, place of community perhaps, a place of creativity perhaps, if you're a musician or an artist. In those moments, you really experience that divine presence. So the mystic is one aspect, and this journey has been about marrying that mystic, that inner part of us, that experiencer of God, with the one who expresses, the activist in us. The activist in us is the one who is giving, who is sharing, the bringer of joy, right? So when we're grounded in that place of the truth of who we are, the spirit of who we are, and we're giving from that place, then things are really lining up, you know, and we are giving, bringing joy, and giving in a place of joy, giving back to ourselves in joy, because everything is coming from that source, that place of origin, that place of where the joy originates within us as well, that natural state of being that we are. We also, on this journey, went back to our spiritual practices and said, let's, you know, revisit those. Look at what really works for us. We talked about cool practices and warm practices, cool practices like meditation that are calming and peaceful and tranquil, and warm practices that really engage the heart, like chanting, or that engage the body, body-centered practices like martial arts or yoga or dance, movement of all kinds. And then we also talked about dreams and bringing dreams into our spiritual practice, paying attention to the language of spirit that speaks to the subconscious mind in the night. And all of these along the way were building blocks. And then every so often we looked at difficult things again. You know, this is the spiritual journey, isn't it, in a nutshell? We looked at the inner saboteurs, the places where we might stop ourselves from the progress that we wish to make. And we looked at the individual personal shadow as well as the collective shadow, the places that we hadn't yet seen before, which is really what a shadow is, brought it out into the light to see so that it could be healed. A lot got accomplished in these many weeks. We also alchemized our anger and our sorrow, and we did that transmutation of common metal into gold, that idea of alchemy. We used that with our own anger, with that fierce kind of energy that anger can be, that fiery energy. We worked with it in order to transform it into a fierce love, into a passion, into righteous anger that is softened to the point that we can say no to what we need to say no to, that we can stand in our strength and our power, but that we can also move into the places where we want to be with compassion, with kindness, with love and connection. All of that alchemy of anger and sorrow resulted in that greater good, those actions for the greater good. We built community. Last week we talked about the networks of joy, the collaborative networks of joy, the importance of what a small group can do together, like the study and service groups that we've begun, some of which will probably continue on together in some shape or form, and also all the ways in which our small groups connect to larger networks. So each of us has many different ways in which we connect with the world, in which we act out in the world as a sacred activist, as we become a bringer of joy. And those all get connected in that great web in a conscious way as we begin to see, oh yeah, so here I am with my team and I get this inspiration, I bring that inspiration to my workplace, or I bring that inspiration to my family, or I bring it to this other community. And on it goes, spreading as a network of grace that raises the vibration together of this earth and turns us to the mystical renaissance, from the death into the rebirth, just like Jackie just experienced, just like anyone who you love has just experienced. There was a memorial here yesterday in this room as well. And so that energy is here of rebirth, of new beginnings, of graduation, of moving from one form of being into another. And that seems to me what's happening on the collective level. We're on the joy end at this moment in time. We may go back into moments of addressing shadow, facing death, you know, alchemizing anger. But it's all part of the realness of our path. It's all part of the embracing of the wholeness of who we are on this journey. So did you find joy? Did you bring joy? That's the reverberating question for today, the great joy. Andrew Harvey, when he talks about the great joy, is talking about those moments when we have that experience where we touch the hem of the garment, if you will. We have that feeling of the divine in us, that oneness, that suspension of everything else. And it is only God now. We are one with that presence. Sometimes we have that in collective groups, those moments, which is even more powerful. And sometimes we have it alone or with the living beings that are around us in different forms. But when we have that experience, then it is our impetus immediately when we find joy to bring joy, right? When we find God to share God, when we find bliss to want to spread it out into the world, because it's more fun when shared, right? Life is more fun when it's shared. When someone laughs, everybody laughs. There's a sort of a contagion to that, a happy contagion to laughter and to joy. See? We'll come back. So for many of us, the question is, you know, joy can sometimes feel elusive. Anybody have that experience where you feel like joy can be a little bit elusive? Yeah. And part of it is because, you know, we're grown-ups. And as grown-ups, we tend to have responsibilities, we have a deeper understanding of things that are happening, and we shoulder that, you know, shoulder that in the world. So there is that sense of kind of that balance of the grief and the joy, right? Part of that is the reality of being human at this time. But yet our natural state, our absolute natural state is that joy. And so finding it becomes part of the game in this spiritual journey. And it is a game when we're talking joy. You know, it is playful when we're talking about joy. So here are some suggestions. Here's one that I've just done recently that I will offer to you. Invite a 4-year-old to come live with you. Instant joy, I tell you, all the time. It's spontaneous, it's play, there's busting out in dance and song and whatever at any time. We have a clock on our wall that, you know, it, every hour, it's really beautiful, it goes off, it plays a song, the world opens up, this little dancing figure comes out, you know. And as adults in the home, after a while, you know, you kind of get used to that and you just don't really pay that much attention to it. But not Grace. When the hour hits, we're all called into the room so that we all may dance to the song. And it's great fun, right? Yeah. So if it's not practical right now for you to invite a 4-year-old to come live with you, which I didn't also think it was very practical, You can invite a puppy or a child, right? A puppy or a kitten or a child. I said child already, though. Or maybe if you don't want to do any of those things, you could just go spend some time hanging out with some kids and some puppies and some kittens, because they just bring that natural child out in us, that natural joy out in us. And it brings it closer to the surface and reminds us to lighten up, to lose some of our self-consciousness, to dance, right? Hear the call of Jabari through the week. Dance, you know, and allow yourself to be in the spontaneity of that joy. So there are other things we can do, certainly. You know, one of the things that happens a lot for us is that we tend to focus on the thing that we think isn't working right, or the thing that isn't missing, or the thing that we believe is missing. So we might have 10 things going really great in our lives, and then the 11th thing, maybe not exactly how we want it, but do you ever notice that some of us tend to spend zero in on that one extra thing, that 11th thing that isn't going as well? And so, you know, the Sufis have a great saying about this. Within your own house lies the treasury of joy, so why go begging door to door? You know, right here is the joy. It doesn't have to be out here. And right here, nothing is missing. And so that idea that there's something missing or something not quite right, we can let that go as we begin to focus more and more on what is working, on what does bring joy, and allow that happiness to come up. It takes over the others. We forget the others because, again, we then turn into the present moment. We are then fully present to the divine. Mary Oliver is a poet who finds this kind of complete joy in nature, and I want to share this poem with you called Mindful. Every day I see or hear something more or less that kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in a haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclimation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but of the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these? The untrimmable light of the world, the ocean's shine, the prayers made out of grass. Causes of joy are everywhere present. Causes of those moments of complete oneness with spirit, back to that natural state, that wonder, that awe, that childlike kind of joy, are available to us always, the wonders of the world everywhere present around us. Dwight Jones, the National Geographic photographer, said he was once sent out on a mission, and the mission was to basically capture the mission of National Geographic, was to go out and they told him, photograph what's right with the world. And he said that that's why most of us feel like it's sacrilegious when we try to get rid of our old National Geographic magazines. No one wants to throw out what's right with the world. Certainly not us, right? Because this is what we're all about, right? Bringing forth what is right with the world, already here, already present, just like it is within us. What is right, what is perfect, what is whole, what is joyful, what is blissful, what makes us dance and sing spontaneously is already here. It's a matter, as the great mystic Meister Eckhart said, of subtraction, not addition. It's a matter of removing that which burdens us, letting go of that self-consciousness, lightening up, and allowing ourselves to feel the joy, to experience the joy, to be in that place of playfulness. It's not all so serious. In fact, it is. No. See, we could even make Mona Lisa laugh, so. She's laughing, not just the crack of the smile, but the whole laugh. And so it is for all of us, right? That spontaneous laughter, and that is so lovely to hear your laughter like that all together. One of the things is just, as always in unity, it's shifting our mindset, right? It's changing out of that space of something's not quite right or something's missing into the splendor and the wonder of what is available to us. Eric Butterworth says in his book, Celebrate Yourself, why do we let thoughts corrode our minds and blind us from the sheer thrill of living? When the ties that bind the mind are broken, he says, and a person is introduced to their real self without limitations, the bells of heaven ring for joy. Because it is in those moments that we return home. It's in those moments that we are returned to the natural state that is our joyful self. And it's in those moments that there is no sense, as he says, of limitation or ideas about who we should be, but we're just simply who we are, like a child or a puppy or a kitten. You can tell I'm fond of those. Laughter is cleansing. There's a Yiddish proverb that says, what soap is to the body, laughter is to the soul. Laughter is a workout. Norman Cousins said, laughter is inner jogging, you know, because all the organs get that sort of jostling around and sort of massaged. And the Japanese proverb that says simply, time spent laughing is time spent with the gods. So laughter is something that, as I mentioned before, we all love to do together. Would you like to share another laugh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just start laughing whenever you want. See? Jenny, I am so glad you're back. We are an easy crowd, it's true. And it's awesome, isn't it? Yeah. Remember to do this when you get home. Just, you know, anybody who wasn't here with you today, just share a really good laugh with them. Just start hysterically laughing like Jenny kind of got us going, you know? And once you start, it's like it doesn't matter what you're laughing about, right? You're just in it. You're in the joy. You're in the laughter. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. So even in the seriousness of facing these deaths that we talked about at the beginning of this series, we can be in a place of joy. We can hold both. We have the capacity to hold both. And as we bring that sense of, yes, I understand the importance of this, whatever this heaviness is, and bringing the lightness to that, it's not dishonoring it, but it's lifting it up. It's transforming it. It's alchemizing it, if you will. It's allowing it to be transmuted into the love and the joy and the peace and the connection that we all came here to be. So together, as we come together in groups, in small groups, as a full community, we are collaborators of this joy. We are networking the grace as well as the joy. And we're bringing that forth in all the ways that we might choose to be sacred activists in the world. Again, sacred activists meaning the marriage of the mystical in us as well as the activist in us, who is out there making a difference through our actions that are grounded in spirit and certainly expressed in joy. When we express in joy, when we allow ourselves to really dance, to dance upon the earth, quite literally we can be massaging the earth and healing her back into wholeness. When we sing, we can be joining with the harmonies all around the world. As we harmonize together, we lift that vibration up to such a greater level. And we can, as we laugh, let that laughter reverberate through our places of worship, our places of work, our places of play, nature itself, our homes, and allow that to be really grounded in the walls and the ceilings and the floors of the places in which we move and have our being. This is the great joy. We have arrived at the great joy. It's been such a pleasure to take this journey of hope with you and to land in a place where we can harmonize our joy. So enjoy this week and stay tuned for our next series. God bless.